Right now, hopefully, I've connected with both people. It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if I've done everything right, we have Cynthia Hasmunder. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And we have Janet Manco.
Yes, good morning.
All right.
It's speaking of systems, you've got it.
I did it in the right order.
By George, you.
All right. Well, okay, let's get on to take a look at the pages of the Lakeville Journal. Right at the top of the pages, an important story, and it's a great local story on an aspect that we have been hearing about and seeing about on the news, about how all these big agri companies are dumping milk and dumping food because the food chain and the milk chain is not processed to change from the way it was to donating. But here locally, you've got a great story about how regional dairies haven't had to do any of that yet.
So Janice Siller, who wrote this article, is the farm director over at Adama CSA around the corner from us at the Camp Isabella Friedman Retreat, and really is very connected to a lot of farmers in the area, and wrote a very interesting, smart article about our local dairies. And one of the things that we're hearing from the CSAs and the farmers is how broken our food distribution system is. And if you followed over the last decades the New England Dairy Compact, farmers in New England make much less money for their milk than the big Midwestern companies do, because the conditions are just so much harder here. It's just harder to make as much milk as they're making in the Midwest. So it's really almost a labor of love, this making of dairy products. And if one thing comes out of this COVID-19 disaster, perhaps it's that we'll all be a little bit more aware of locally sourced food and figure out a way for us to have regulations that allow us to get locally sourced foods such as dairy products, and have the milk producers able to create and produce and distribute their own milk. And I think that people who are familiar with the town of Sharon and its funny regulations, there's a guy there who built a whole chicken processing plant on his property and is raising beautiful chickens and wasn't able to sell them because of specific regulations in the town of Sharon. There's similar regulations with beef. It's very hard for these farmers to get foods processed and get them back to us. But at the moment, you still can get beef and pork from our local farms and our local CSAs, and the dairies have figured out a way to get milk to us through the Agrimark and Cabot cooperatives, so that all the little dairy farms around here are all working with regional dairy cooperatives. A lot of them have had to take sour cream and yogurt, and they've been giving them out to homeless shelters and to food pantries, and able to really help people who are most at risk and need some extra nutrition, which is great. But it would be really terrific if all of our different food processing, if moving forward, we all look at ways to make it more regional and more sustainable.
You know, when I was growing up, I lived on a chicken farm. My grandfather was a chicken farmer and literally had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of chicken. And if there was any interruption in the food supply or food chain, it never really affected my grandfather or my grandmother or us really until he passed away and it was no longer a chicken farm. But another thing locally, and I think what this story brought to mind, is our local farmers have been far more inventive in not only relying on the milk, but other things that they've branched out to do. And they understand the food chain far better, I think local farmers do, than these big mega corporations, which don't care about the food chain. They just care about getting food directly to hotels and restaurants.
Right. That's one thing that Janet talks about, and then we keep hearing from all these food producers, is that restaurants are their biggest source of income, that they're having to figure out how to reapportion the products that they're making so that it's more going direct to consumers. I remember several years ago there was a shortage of pumpkin nationwide, and everybody panicked because the canned pumpkin was all primarily coming from one company that was in Illinois, and there was a bad growing year. The crops had been ruined. But around here it wasn't a big deal because you have farmers in Connecticut and Massachusetts and New York, and they were all growing different varieties of pumpkin that you could make your pumpkin pie with. So that's the ideal thing, is even if there's a glitch at one point in the food chain, that there should be enough different companies that are producing food that they can still get it to us.
All right. We're going to stay on the COVID-19 kick here for just a second. And that is a great story by Patrick Sullivan, because I'm fully aware of this with dealing with Salisbury Bank and Trust, about area banks giving out more than $100 million in payroll protection loans. And Salisbury Bank has given out over $96 million over almost 750 loans themselves.
And so Patrick spoke to all of our local banks. They're all doing great work of very quickly getting funds to us. And I'm going to let Janet talk about this, because she really lived through the process. But I think that one thing that we heard very early in the process was they're really doing this and endangering themselves, because there's no guarantee from the government that they'll be repaid if these funds are forgiven or people just don't pay them back. But $100 million just in our area, and that really tells you a lot about the need here. So, Janet, do you want to talk about the PPP and your experience with it?
Sure. As we'll see on the editorial page, the Lakeville Journal Company did apply for PPP loans, and Marshall, am I right that you did too at WHTD?
We applied for PPPE. We've also applied for four other grants that we found out, and we thank God, because we're a 501c3, we not only got the PPP loan, but also three other grants that are helping us get through this. So the PPP, that process to us was very simple, and the bank was, Rick Cantelli and the whole crew was absolutely amazing to get that done and quick really through.
Yeah, they were as Cynthia said, they've all been amazing at the banks, and one of the reasons is that things have been changing day to day as they were trying to deal with all of requirements and qualifications around these applications. And so they really had to be alert and think on their feet, and it's still that way, because even now the qualifications for having the loans forgiven are still changing, and so they're doing webinars on this, and it's still a process, and it will be. But you know, it's an important way that small businesses can stay alive during this time. And do read Patrick's story, because it does describe what banks and businesses have gone through, and you know, keep small businesses in mind and support them during this time.
And you've got a story on the front page about, I found out right away, I haven't had physical therapy in a while now, and I've been going to Gear, but their physical therapy services are now virtual,
which is so interesting. And actually, I'm going to pop by there in a few minutes. There's a lot, they're starting to slowly come back to life at Gear, and actually, we just bought a big bag of very cute little handmade masks. So, a lot of the Northwest YMCA workers, they're keeping them on. They're looking for creative ways to keep them on payroll. So they've thoroughly cleaned and done a lot of fix-ups at all of the YMCA locations here. But they're also making these really cute masks, which they're donating to people in need. But you can also call over to the YMCA and ask about purchasing some, which we just, Janet just got us a big bag full of them. But the physical therapy is starting to come back to life, and they are doing virtual sessions so that you can do it like on Zoom. And of course, they can't do manual, you know, manipulation, but they can kind of walk you through your exercises, and they can, as with all of our doctors now, they can listen to your symptoms and sort of look at the way that you're moving on Zoom and figure it out. And for the moment, they're doing no copays. So if you have insurance or Medicare, they would take that payment, but they're not asking you to pay the additional $30 or whatever.
All right. And your story about care for COVID-19 patients, I just finished speaking with Dr. Mark Herko. And one of the things that he pointed out is that, you know, I asked him about recovery and stuff like that. And he said, you know, basically recovery is kind of a guess in the dark, because the way they consider you recovered is if you've gone through 12 to 14 days and you don't show the symptoms anymore and you pass these tests, which are anywhere from 80 to 95% effective, you're not considered recovered. You're considered, okay, you don't have the active COVID-19 virus. So this story that I started reading last night is a real interesting story.
So Licia Hahn, who is a neighbor of mine here in Lakeville, and she's an amazing woman, and has done a lot of work in different areas of media, had started a podcast with a guy called Dr. Phil Stieg, who is a neurosurgeon and super smart, head of neurosurgery at Weill Cornell Presbyterian in New York, and just has one of those super soothing voices, very friendly, very warm, but really smart. And so he has all these people on, and he interviews them about the brain and how our lives are impacted by the brain, and it's very accessible. And he had done a recent episode of this podcast where he spoke to Dr. Laura Kolb, who's in charge of palliative care at the hospital. And it was so interesting and so moving what she talked about, which is, you know, one thing that they learned very quickly when COVID-19 patients started to come in was that they would go very quickly from being able to have a conversation with their caregivers to suddenly being on respirators, not able to convey their wishes, and not necessarily people who had done advanced directives, like not automatically people who were toward the end of life or who had an illness that they knew might, you know, go bad. So they had to learn to immediately on intake say, what are your, you know, what are your wishes for your care going into the future, and give them an opportunity to discuss it with family so that everybody in the family knew, so that there was a designated person that was in charge of these decisions, so that you didn't have somebody who was suddenly on a respirator and the family had to suddenly go, like, we don't actually know what their wishes are. They wanted to make sure that everybody had discussed it. And also this idea of you have these people who are possibly at end of life or who are at a very scary moment, and they can't see their families and they can't see their caregivers because everybody's got PPEs on, and how they've learned to overcome that and be able to give compassionate care to their patients. It's a really beautiful podcast. So Alicia talks about that a little bit, but she also talks about the process of creating this show. It's we highly recommend it.
All right, and let's get to tonight. There is the virtual meeting for the Region 1 Board of Education. Sam Herrick will give a presentation, and if you join in a virtual presentation, you can even ask questions, and you've got a story on the budget by Patrick Sullivan.
So it's been a weird year because towns are actually able to pass their budgets with nobody seeing them or paying attention to them. But I have to say, at the risk of being a little cynical, that this often happens. People don't really come out for their budget meetings. And what we've seen a lot with some of these Zoom presentations is a lot more people actually sign in than might necessarily leave the house to go to these things. So we'll hope a lot of people do sign in for the Region 1 budget, which is one of the biggest portions of your annual tax bill, and definitely impacts your high school students going forward. The budget information is online. You can look at the numbers as you're hearing them present it, and definitely to sign in and ask questions. And this is true for your town budgets also. Everybody's doing budget presentations online. I think Kent did theirs last night, so it may be too late on those, on theirs. But do go to your town's website and see what the link is so that you can find out what your budget numbers are going to be for the coming year. Most towns, I have to say, are being very responsible and trying to keep a 0% increase or as low an increase as possible.
All right. Also, you've got a nice couple of stories on a couple of the parades, that car parades, one for Barbara Bartram and the other one put on by the Tri-State Chamber of Commerce.
I know. It's so funny. The COVID-19 year is going to be remembered as the year of the car parade, and you see them all the time on the Internet, and, of course, our area is no exception. And Barbara Bartram, who turned 91, out on the lawn with her niece and her nephew, and a lot of cars went by. She's a person who's contributed a lot to the town of Sharon. Very active with the Historical Society, just one of those people that really steps up. And the Tri-State Chamber, Marlene White from Lime Rock Park, not necessarily a resident of our six towns, but really has become a community member here and is also leading the Walk for Alzheimer's this year, which is a big cause that Lime Rock Park celebrates. But she was helped organize the Tri-State Chamber Car Parade.
All right.
Can I jump us back to A2 a little bit? Because this is there are two stories here that are really important to us, which is, there's a lot of people outdoors right now. Everybody's hiking, everybody's fishing, everybody's doing whatever they can to get out of the house, burn off a little steam, get some sun. And people really need to be careful about their litter. And it's not just unsightly, and it's not just that people are throwing out more trash now. It's also that there are more people out walking and are seeing how much trash routinely gets thrown on the side of the road. But do please not throw trash on the walking trails as you're out there. Just remember that we're all really enjoying this outdoor space. It's important to all of us, and it'd be so much better if there wasn't a lot of trash. And Patrick Sullivan talks about seeing it out in the river. Amy Lake talks about seeing it on the rail trail. We have a letter that Janet will talk about too much fishing line being left out at Factory Pond.
You know, and I've done this before. I think the state police in our area have to really get on these people that are illegally parking and going into these parks illegal. And I won't identify it, but I did speak to somebody who lives by the Appalachian Trail area, and the cars are so far illegally parked that one person actually got locked in their house because cars blocked the driveway.
Yeah, and because remember, the Appalachian Trail is legally closed right now. You're not supposed to be hiking on it. Kent has had a lot of problems with that, and down at Bulls Bridge at the waterfall, which is always a problem spot. A lot of people come in from out of town, leave a ton of trash there. People really need to be observant of social distance rules, even when you're out of doors.
All right. I want to go to the story about Kent and cell tower, and the town is joining in that fight now.
So it's a very interesting moment when we have, this is always sort of quietly the schism in the northwest corner, which is you have a certain number of people who are saying, we really need to get high-speed internet and better cell phone service here. People don't really want to buy houses here. People can't live remotely here. And you have a certain number of people who are saying, we will sue any company that tries to bring in better cell phone service or better internet service here. So with COVID-19, you have a lot of people coming up from the city, either who were part-timers before or who weren't here before at all and who are renting, and they have to work remotely. They have no choice, because we all are. And a lot of people, we've been told by realtors, as soon as they rent a house, they immediately run the lines up to the house so that they can get high-speed internet and continue to do their work. In the town of Kent, Singular is trying to bring a new cell tower into an area that we know is grossly undercovered up by Sager Mountain Road, where there's a lot of car accidents. It's a very windy stretch of road. There have been a couple fatal motorcycle accidents there. People in town have literally said, we're going to sue you if you try to bring that tower in. The town of Kent is not specifically saying, we're going to sue if the company tries to bring it in, but it's out of the town's hands. The state siting council is going to decide if this tower is going to be built or not. So the town of Kent has signed in as they have what's called party status, which is one step below intervener status, but they are allowed to participate in cross-examination and to hear all the evidence that's presented. And I'd say there's even a schism within the board in Kent where some people feel like, you know, we really do need to get some cell service there. The emergency services would be helpful to them. But people who live in the area feel very strongly that they don't want it. So that's going to be an ongoing challenge. And I believe the siting council has to make a decision sometime in the next few months on that.
All right. We only have about 4 minutes left before we get to the editorial page. Lisa Carter, this is a smart move, hiring her as the interim superintendent while they take a full year to really look and have Lisa and other people apply for the job. I think that is a smart move by the Region 1 Board of Education.
Right. I think it's important for them to talk to everybody and do due diligence. I think that generally in the region there is a sense that people really like Lisa Carter. She was a great teacher at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. She was a great principal at Salisbury Central School. She's been a very popular assistant superintendent and certainly knows the job. And I think that there's a lot of support for her, but always good to go through the whole process.
All right, Janet, I want to go to you because your editorial on the program is step one in the recovery.
Right. Here we describe how we went through the process. We have received a PPP loan. That's the one that we applied for, and we did receive it on May 1st, and now have 8 weeks to figure out how to best utilize it. And so many other businesses, as you see from the front page article from Patrick Sullivan, so many other businesses in this area have done this to stay alive. So let's hope that this works to keep the economy intact and be able to be maintained. We need a viable local economy as well as statewide, nationwide.
And there's lots of letters, we're just plain running out of time. But I want to comment on one article you have, and it was almost like there's been mind reading going on, and that is the headline in this article: Biden is running a logic-defying campaign from his basement. He is just not visible at all during this crisis.
That's right. And this is from Dick Ollis, whose column is If You Ask Me, and we love to ask him every other week, and he tells us what he thinks. So don't miss that column by Dick Ollis about Joe Biden and how he's running this campaign and what it means for the country.
And the crowd porn by Peter Steiner I almost fell off the chair when I was reading that.
And isn't it true? So, right, we can say that, but you really have to see it to get the full effect, like so many things, like crowds. But,
which is the whole point for having a paper.
Exactly. And when we say we have a lot of letters, we have a lot of letters about all different things. And Cynthia mentioned the one letter about that's so important from Tracy Shannon in Lakeville, and needing to protect the wildlife around us because that left-behind fishing line really kills birds and has a big effect on wildlife. But so many other things. Do read them all.
All right, Cynthia, you have a minute and a half to go over Compass.
Well, that's a ton. So we also, in the regular paper, we had an article where we interviewed Helen Ross, who had seen a bunch of poems being put up on the rail trail in Salisbury, and my daughter invented a new type of COVID poetry. You can read about that. And then we have three ongoing contemporary arts events. One is the Rose Allgrant Show, one of the most popular shows of work by Cornwall artists. They're doing a special sale online right now of works on paper, but also in fabric and other materials. Simon Winchester, very popular author throughout the world but lives up in Massachusetts, is going to do a Zoom talk this Saturday at 4 p.m. about a book on the Mississippi River. And Simon, who's a very experienced travel journalist and thoughtful guy and writes about interesting stuff, talking about the Mississippi River and how it's so much a construction of dams and what would happen if those dams fail, which could happen. And then Eric Forsman, the painter who lives in Sharon, always a favorite around here, does beautiful work. And so he has been creating a painting online through the Jane Eckert Fine Art Gallery, which is his gallery down in Kent, and you can watch him making one of his interesting paintings. I think they're in the fourth installment right now.
All right. Well, those stories and more in the Lakeville Journal and TriCornerNews.com, which, by the way, I am a member of, where you can get the paper, and you can even read it the old-fashioned way by bringing up a PDF version of it, so it's you actually feel like you're reading a paper by scrolling it.
Right, and we're in the process of expanding our dealers a little bit now, too, step by step. And don't miss our two banners, thanking essential service providers, benefiting Salisbury visiting nurses, and gardens and landscaping. Who isn't doing that now?
All right. Well, speak to you guys next week. Stay safe.
You too. Thank you so much.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. As I said, you can find them at TriCornerNews.com.